Ohayou gozaimasu, konnichiwa, konbanwa, for whenever you're listening to the Joshi Pod, your weekly podcast about the world of Japanese women's wrestling. Joshi Wrestling, I'm your host, Eric Howard, coming to you from beautiful San Diego, California. And this week, very excited to have Yappy from Ice Ribbon and Peace Party on the podcast. She's somebody I've wanted to have on for so long. And we finally have her, so very thankful for the time she gave us, which was almost 2 hours, so I'm very thankful for that. Yappy's such a wonderful person. She's helped out so many people in so many different ways. She's helped this podcast out immeasurably as well. And yeah, I think you're going to enjoy the chat with her. And we're going to keep the opening here pretty brief this time, but yeah, check out her Twitter. I'll put all those links and stuff in the show notes, and how to sign up for Nico Pro, the Ice Ribbon page, and support Ice Ribbon, support Yappy, and support all the women that do such a wonderful job. Ice Ribbon is so underrated, I think, as a promotion, and they always put on such great shows. And Tequila Saya, the one who does the announcing, is amazing. I have no idea what she's saying, but I just love her cadence and the way she, her excitement and stuff. So yeah, give us, give them a follow, give, Yappy a listen. And guys, again, gonna keep it brief, and, what's coming up soon, guys, we have a little Session Moth session. We've got some other people lined up as well, and, we're gonna end with a bang here, guys. I'm gonna do my best to end this with a bang as we wrap it up on Halloween. And, yep, on that note, guys, we'll talk to you next week. Arigato gozaimasu.
Hello again, friend of a friend. I knew you were.
All right, guys, here at the Joshi Pod. And the Joshi Pod is all about introducing the world to wrestlers. And it's about, well, it's selfish. I'm selfish. It's about me wanting to talk to people I want to talk to. And somebody I've wanted to talk to since pretty much the start of the podcast is somebody who I admire greatly for many, many reasons, and many reasons more since I started the podcast and got to know her a little bit. I want to welcome to the show Yappy. Thank you for joining the Joshi Pod, Yappy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Yappy, I could butter your bread here for an hour and talk about how wonderful I think you are.
Please don't hang up.
But I love adventurers. I love people who are willing to go out of the ordinary and do exceptional things. And I admire you for that. I admire you for leaving your comfort zone in the Philippines and going to Japan. So first of all, I'm going to ask you, you've told your story many times about how you've ended up in Japan. How did you end up wrestling in Japan?
How did I end up wrestling? It's all by chance, really. I was friends with this guy who, like, at the time, you know, I started out, you know, I came to Japan hoping to become an illustrator. And then, as a lot of foreigners looking to work in Japan, they start out teaching English. It's the easiest way to get to Japan. And then while you're teaching English, you go into another field. And so I was an English teacher, and then I just kind of lulled for a while. And then I met this guy, he became a friend, and he also started out as an English teacher, but then he became a rock star. So he had a band with guys from like prominent rock bands. One was like a Sex Machine Guns, and he his guitarist is also a guitarist from Sex Machine Guns, and just like, you know, really like established people in the industry. And I'm like, and hearing his story, how he really hustled, I felt like, oh my God, I let myself get into this like dull period in my life where nothing's happening. And usually I try to do something with my life. So I said, okay, what am I going to do? What's something that I've always loved? And I look back at my memories, like, what did I love? What did I love? I loved wrestling. So at that time, my friend, my friend who I had a Japanese friend who is a wrestling fan, and I told him I want to see a wrestling show, and he brought me to my first Joshi show in Basement Monstar. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say which promotion it is, but I saw Aoi Kitsuki there, I saw Makoto there, and a few other wrestlers. I was like, oh my god, this is so much fun. And like, who are these guys? He's like, oh, this is this and this is this, and these two used to be from Ice Ribbon. And I'm like, what's Ice Ribbon? And I started watching some YouTube videos, and then my friend said, you know, they have a school, they have lessons. I'm like, you have lessons? And then it's like, oh, but they probably won't take me. And then I looked at a lot of Joshi websites from then, and a lot of them said they accept trainees up to 25 years old. At that time, I was 37. So it's like, oh, well, I guess there goes that window. And then I looked at Ice Ribbon's webpage, and it's like, no age limit, no previous experience necessary, no sports experience necessary, complete beginners welcome. And I was like, well, I love Ice Ribbon, and they'll take me. This is my wrestling school. But I went in there thinking that it was just going to be a hobby, because wrestling, Ice Ribbon's wrestling circle is open to also hobbyists. Like, we have a girl there who's been attending wrestling circle for like 9 years now. She never debuted. She just does it as a hobby. So that was my intention originally.
Just to go and pretend to be a wrestler, you know, at practice or whatever, like a softball league or anything like that, bowling league.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, like you get to do drills, you get to do, it's not just getting in the ring and fighting each other, it's doing like, you know, drills and exercises. So it's kind of like, you know, it's like going to the gym, but you're wrestling and you're learning wrestling moves, and we teach like basics, like we teach you how to body slam, we teach you how to bump. So yeah, it's fun.
And yell and scream.
Pardon?
You get to learn how to yell and scream, like Joshi wrestlers learn how to yell and scream.
Actually, that's very important. When we're running the ropes, when we're practicing running the ropes, if you're silent, your senpai's going to go, "Koi dashite!" It means like, yell, yell. Like, you can't just run the rope silently. You have to yell. One of our practices, like one thing Mio likes to make us do while we're running the ropes, is we have to sing while running the ropes. And we have to sing loud enough that you can hear us clearly from the door. So
the front door of the dojo? The front door of the dojo? You have to be able to hear you sing from there?
Yeah, well, actually, that's really easy to hear you from there because the dojo's acoustics are very good. But Kushi always tells us, imagine you're in Korakuen Hall and I'm in the cheapest seats and I have to hear you sing. So, yeah.
So I know that the Philippine passport is not the strongest passport in the world. Do they allow, I mean, for English teachers to go to Japan from the Philippines? Is that pretty common?
Oh, that's really tough. The thing is, you can't get hired directly from the Philippines. We have this weird law. Supposedly, it's to stop human trafficking, because the Philippines gets victimized a lot that way. So a company can't hire you directly from another country. They have to go through these accredited agencies, which, you know, none of these agencies handle wrestling. And the ones that handle English teaching, you know, you don't have your choice of companies. You can only go to the companies that they provide you for, which none of them really appealed to me. So I had to come to Japan as a student. So I had to pool my money, get enough money to come to Japan to study, get a visa for studying. And then from there, I got a 3-month visa. And for those 3 months, I had like 3 months to find a job so I can convert my visa into a working visa to teach English. So it's a lot of hoops to run to, you know, like Americans can just come to Japan. And then, I mean, they can get hired online and then come to Japan. We can't do that.
So how difficult was it for you to get hired as an English teacher?
I'm going to toot my own horn here for a little bit. I've never Okay, this is going to sound super arrogant, but in my life experience, I've never had a job interview where I didn't get a job offer.
Good for you. No, I've only lost one time, so.
That's like my special skill. Like, I mean, getting somebody to look at my resume is a little more difficult, but once I get that face-to-face interview, I'm like, all right, I'm getting this job. I know it sounds so arrogant saying that, but that's my experience.
No, that's the truth is not arrogant, right?
You see, like, I interviewed to be a wrestler and I became a wrestler.
What part of Japan was this in where you started teaching?
Pardon?
What part of Japan? Was it in Tokyo?
Oh, yeah. I've always been in Tokyo. Like, ever since I moved here, it's been Tokyo, Tokyo, Tokyo. Although, like, 20 years ago, I was a student in Japan, too, and that was in the Aichi Prefecture.
Now, is that where you started learning Japanese, or did you learn Japanese back in the Philippines?
I started learning Japanese when I was in high school. I bought a book and an audiobook, and I started learning by myself. Back then, the internet was not, you know, as great as a resource as it is now. You know, we didn't have Duolingo. We didn't have online lessons. So I just learned from a book. And then that was in maybe 1995, no, 1996. And then in the year 2000, I told my parents I really want to go to Japan and study Japanese. So by the time I got to Japan, I was already, like, according to their level, that's the school that I went to, their leveling system, I was already on level 8 from self-learning. And I could already read and write. So, yeah, I taught myself to read and write. I taught myself basic grammar and basic sentences. So within 2 months, I was able to hold, like, conversations.
Japanese is not easy to learn. What drove you, what motivated you to keep at it and learn it so well?
Actually, in my experience in learning languages, Japanese has been the easiest to learn, at least second easiest to learn. The hardest to learn was Chinese.
How many languages do you speak?
Let's see, like, native level is English and Filipino, and then conversational level, like, Japanese. Survival level, Chinese, and then very low level, German and Spanish.
I'm fascinated. You fascinate me every time I talk to you, Yappy, or every time I hear.
Very low level German. Like, I was better maybe 2 years or 3 years ago, but I haven't spoken German in a long time. So I've gotten super rusty. Sometimes I'll have Tekla check my German, or like, when we were doing that Karuta writing, she wrote something in German and she was like, can you translate for me? It's like, okay, sure, no problem. So a little bit, but you know, I can't hold a decent conversation in either German or Spanish. Spanish, I used to talk to the CMLL wrestlers that came to guest at Ice Ribbon. But
some Filipino is Spanish as well, so I'm sure that helps. That's helpful a little bit.
The vocabulary, yes. Yeah. Not the grammar and not the sentence formations.
Yeah, like the conjugating verbs and things like that.
Yeah, but we have words like, you know, like we say, like we use sombrero and we use mesa.
Numbers a lot too, yeah.
Yeah, nouns. We have a lot of Spanish nouns.
You impress me, Yappy. Every time I hear about you or read about you or listen
to
you.
Impressed.
No, I'm not.
You're easy to please. I'll tell you that.
No, that's just another thing I think is that impresses me about you is that your drive and willingness to learn and learn things like that. You know, that's impressive to me.
Well, thank you.
So Japanese, you learn Japanese, you're over there as a student. Is that where we see those wild pictures of Yappy on social media? Is wild young Yappy with the red or pink hair that you had back then?
That was actually like after I came back from Japan. Okay. And I mean, I was a young impressionable kid. Like, I was 20 years old, so I came to Japan with black hair and simple black clothes. Although I think my classmates said I kind of dressed like a raver. Anyway, and then I come back from Japan and suddenly I have these 5-inch platforms and my hair's in pigtails and it's pink. And, you know, and looking back, I'm like, oh my God, I was such an impressionable, dumb kid. But, you know, we got to have those periods in our life where we just, let things influence us and have fun and roll with it.
Oh, you should see some of my old driver's license pictures. I'm embarrassed by some of the hair decisions I made at certain parts and points in my life.
The embarrassment is good. The embarrassment means that you lived.
Absolutely. So what, being there as a student, what was like life for you like? Did you just immediately jump into the Japanese culture and love it right away? Or was there some adjustment periods for you?
Well, the thing is, like, I didn't go to a school. I went to a language school. So that kind of puts you into a bubble because my dormitory was filled with foreigners. And the only Japanese people that I would meet would be my teachers and the people manning the shops that I go to. You know, so I at that time, actually, even me until now, it's going to be hard to believe, but I'm incredibly shy. And I'm incredibly introverted, and I don't just go out and make friends. So I am, I don't get as immersed in Japanese culture as I want to, which is why I liked my English teaching job, because it was a one-on-one English teaching job. And then I could talk to people one-on-one and hear about their life. And I'm like, oh, so this is this. And I learned a lot about Japanese culture through that, because it wasn't just one kind of person. Like today, I'll talk to businessmen. The next day, I'll talk to students. The next day, I'll talk to housewives. I'll talk to freelancers. It's people from all sorts of lifestyles. And then, you know, from their stories and their experiences, you kind of, you know, put the pieces together and build yourself a picture of what Japanese society and culture is like. And then I get into wrestling, and suddenly every day I'm talking to Japanese people and working, and I don't speak English anymore. This is the first time I've spoken English in like over a week.
You and Tekla spoke English together?
Yes, yes. That's why I told her when she was leaving. It's like, the only English speaker is gone.
What do your parents think about you going on to Japan, first off, as being a teacher? What do they think of that?
I think they're kind of used to it, like just how I live my life, because prior to that, I lived in China. And the way that I left for China, it was like I was in the Philippines and I thought, you know, I should get out of here. Where should I go? Oh, maybe I'll go to China. And then 2 months later, Mom, I'm moving to China. So, you know, and then I came back to the Philippines, stayed home for a while. And then I said, Mom, I'm going to go to Japan and I'm going to study Japanese maybe for 3 months. And I get to Japan a month later, I call home, Mom, I'm not coming home. So, you know, it's kind of like, oh, okay, there's Yappy doing her Yappy things again. So.
But I'm assuming they're proud that you have the initiative to go out and do that. Because, I mean, the Philippines is a third world country, you know. So,
my parents, I grew up to be the exact opposite of what they tried to raise me to be. They tried to raise me to be a dainty girl. You know, they were always putting me in like frilly pink dresses, and they put me in ballet, even if I wanted to be in karate. And and I wasn't allowed to do anything by myself. Like, I'm the only person in my entire family who doesn't know how to drive. Instead, I had my own driver. You know, they wouldn't let me drive. They wouldn't let me go anywhere by myself. I was like the princess child. Like, all my siblings can go and do whatever they want. But when I want to do something, who are you going? What time will you go? Who's going with you? Who are these people? How do you know them? How do we know them? What are their phone numbers? You know? My siblings, what? Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Your siblings?
No, my siblings, they're all, you know, now they're family people. They have children. They have jobs. And I'm the one who's off in the world doing whatever I want, which is, I was supposed to be the one who stays home and has and gets married and has children and has a quiet little life. But no, it's the exact opposite of what my parents planned for me.
Did you grow up in Manila, or where did you grow up in the Philippines?
I grew up in Manila, yes.
A Manila girl.
Yep. Although funny enough, because of my parents' overprotectiveness, I barely know anything about Manila. I couldn't go anywhere because my parents were so, you know, overprotective. Like, I don't even know how to use public transportation in Manila.
You can't get on a jeepney and find your way around?
I don't know how to use a jeepney. That's how coddled I am.
Wow.
Yep. And then so I'm super coddled, and then I go off to China, and then without speaking a lick of Chinese, grab myself a motorcycle and ride a motorcycle all around China. That's what you do when you keep your daughter coddled. That's what happens. She goes off to another country and rides a motorcycle.
How did you survive in China? How did you like make money to live?
I was an art teacher.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I worked for an American international school. So I worked as an art teacher, and I also helped out in the English department. It's like, oh, you know, they hired me as an art teacher. And when I got there, like, oh, your English is sounding pretty good. So why don't you help out the English department too? I'm like, sure.
So you being bilingual has been helpful all the way around.
It is. It is. It's so useful to be bilingual. That's why, like, you know, you have these parents, you know, who are like, they're, you have these people who are in intercultural marriages, and then they want their child to speak one language. Like, no, don't do that. Make them speak both. It's going to be so helpful when they're grown.
Yeah.
And also, when you're bilingual, it's your brain is, it's easier on your brain to learn additional languages.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, there's a generation of even Filipinos now that aren't even learning Tagalog. They're just learning English.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of like a colonial mentality that's been deep rooted in Filipino culture for many generations now. We always feel like the another country is better than us. And so there's this whole thing where you have to speak English. And like a lot of Filipinos who move to America, they don't want their children to be Filipino. They want their children to be as American as possible to show that they've escaped the third world. Which, and the children, you know, they grow up and they want to learn about their culture. Like, mom, because I dated somebody who was born in America, but he is Filipino. And he was always saying that, oh, I wish I knew how to speak Filipino. I wish I knew more about the Philippines. I wish I knew about my homeland. So, you know, don't deprive children of their culture.
Yeah, my best friend Joe is Filipino. He's a Filipino-American. And he's just now, he's a little bit older than me. And he's just now trying to discover his culture. He's in late 40s and, you know, going back and learning and meeting his family in the Philippines and stuff. So it's like, yeah, he's going back and trying to discover it at almost 50 years old.
Exactly. See, so it's an important thing. Anyway, sorry, I keep digressing into different topics.
that's exactly what this podcast is all about. Just jibber jabbering and whatever topic we get on, we get on.
Well, I don't want people to get bored.
I don't care. This podcast is for me. that's what I tell people. This podcast is for me sometimes, so but you know, you'd be surprised, people will want to listen to this. People will want to listen to this.
Okay, anyway,
all right, so you're in Japan. How often do you get to go back to visit your family in the Philippines?
I would usually come home in November is my grandmother's birthday, and she always has a party on for her birthday. And so I would come home to see her, although she passed away this year due to COVID. Mm-hmm. So I actually can't see her anymore. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Yeah, so I would usually come home like once a year, see my grandma, and yeah. And then this year, because of COVID-19, I can't go home to the Philippines, because if I come home, I might not be able to come back to Japan. So yeah. I'm kind of stuck here for a while.
So, I hate to ask this follow-up question, but do you get homesick?
I sometimes do, but not so heavily, because my family has a group. We have a group chat, and then so I talk to them every day. Like, you know, I see something dumb on the street, and I see something funny in the street, I take a picture of it and send it to the family group. They're like, wahaha, you know, and they're constantly sending pictures of themselves. So of course I miss them, but then it's like, it's not like I don't get to communicate with them, but I do miss the food at home. I miss, you know, I miss a whole bunch of things, but I'm used to being alone. I've been on my own since, oh, for over a decade. Yeah, more than a decade now. And I guess I'm just very comfortable being by myself. So I'm not really the type who gets homesick so much once in a while it spikes, but it goes away fairly quickly.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what, you still miss your mom and dad every once in a while.
Of course.
No matter who you are.
So, you know, you should spend time with them as much as I can. So.
Yeah. And they're probably, I mean, we're similar ages. And I'm older than you. So, I mean, my parents' health, I worry about all the time and you know, not going too far away as well. So I'm guessing you have similar concerns and worries as well.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, when you're with somebody like every day, you don't really notice the changes. But then when I see them like once a year or once every 2 years, you really see how they aged within that time span. And it's like, oh my God, they've gotten older again. So it hits me hard each time.
Yeah. And your grandma passed away while you were in Japan and you were not able to attend the services.
Yeah.
That's one of the sucky things about... Is it because of COVID you couldn't go back? Is that why you couldn't go back?
Yeah. I couldn't go back because, if I come home to the Philippines, they won't let me back in Japan. And also, if I come home to the Philippines, they'll quarantine me for like 14 days. And I might not even have a say where I'll be quarantined. Mm. And maybe this is just me being paranoid, but I've been seeing some photos online and some of the places don't seem very desirable. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna stay here and wait it out. I thought I only had to wait it out a couple of months, but it's still going on. So I know. But then we couldn't have a proper funeral anyway because, you know, there's still some restrictions. So it was just close friends and family. So my brother set up a camera, you know, at the venue just so I can like watch while it was going on.
That's good. That's good. At least you got that, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's get back to your wrestling a little bit here. Yes. So you start, we're going to jump back and forth. It's going to be like one of those movies where it jumps into now the past.
Yeah. I'm sorry. And I go off in other topics a lot. So anyway, go ahead. Wrestling.
Oh, me too. Trust me. All right. So you decide to... You go to the Basement Monstar in, where is that at? I've been there before.
That's in Oji.
Oji, yeah. There's a pizza place in Oji that I like to go eat at. So I always remember Oji. When I really want pizza while I'm in Japan, I go to Oji.
I've only been there for Basement Monstar. That's it.
I was stayed there one time at an Airbnb. That's how I found out about that place. So. So you start training. What's your immediate thought when you start training at Ice Ribbon? Like, am I was crazy to do this, or this is fun, or what's your initial thought like after your first few lessons?
I was like, this is cool. I'm in a wrestling ring. I've never been in a wrestling ring before. It was like, oh my God, you know, it's these people I've been watching on YouTube. Oh my God, I'm doing push-ups beside Tsukushi. You know? It wasn't even about the exercise. I'm like, I'm in a wrestling ring. I'm beside Squishy. I'm like arm wrestling against Maruko. Oh my God, what's this? Is this reality? So, like, imagine yourself, you know, like you know, imagine like you're just this random fan on Twitter, and then suddenly you're in the same room with the same people you've been admiring on Twitter. That was the feeling. I'm like, oh my God, I'm actually like. And even after I debuted, I'm like, I'm actually among these people. I'm one of them. So, yeah.
So when you put your application in or whatever you have to do to even get started, what do they think when they see your age and see that you're Filipino? And what are they thinking? Are they like, hey, this is pretty cool. Let's let her join. Or do they have questions for you at all?
Not really. The thing is like, so there's two ways to introduce yourself to Ice Ribbon. One is... you put yourself forward as a prospective roster member. So, you know, there's an email address. You send your picture and your sports history and whatever. And you tell them, I want to be a wrestler. Or you can just show up at Wrestling Circle and say, hey, I want to join Wrestling Circle. So, and that's, you know, for people who start out as hobbyists. Or it's our way of tricking you into becoming a wrestler. Because, oh, you think you're coming in as a hobby, but we're also trying to actually turn you pro, and you just don't know it. Yeah, you know, there are people who, I want to be a wrestler. And there are people like, wrestling looks scary. Like, no, you don't really have to wrestle. Just come play with us. And then, haha, we're going to make you a wrestler. Which is pretty much what did to Yuki Mashiro. So, yeah, that's pretty much the story of Yuki Mashiro.
She got tricked into it?
Pretty much. It's like, you know, like she joined Wrestling Circle because her dad wanted her to join Wrestling Circle. And then periodically, Shacho, like president, would constantly ask her, hey, do you have plans to debut? Do you have plans to debut? And she was like, nah, I'm not really going to debut. No, it looks scary. No. But look, we turned her into a wrestler. We debuted her. We got you, Yuki Mashiro.
You're stuck now.
I know.
So but what I tried was... to
keep with her.
What was the hardest thing for you to learn immediately or initially when you started training?
Just being active. I mean, I was 37 when I entered, and I haven't really been active at all before that. I mean, I was a roller derby player, but, you know, roller derby or on wheels, I'm not good without the wheels. Like, I could not run at that time. And it's just like I was not used to so much activity that my knee just blew up. And I developed like early onset arthritis on my left knee from 1 week of joining Wrestling Circle. And yeah, so, but you know, like they stuck with me. And I still had some muscle memory left when I did gymnastics 30 years ago for some, you know, miraculous reason. I was surprised I could still do a cartwheel. And so from there, I actually had a small foundation to work from. But it was hard because you see, you know, all the people around you doing things like it was super easy. And then, okay, here's my turn. And it's kind of embarrassing. So, yeah.
Did they treat you different because of your age? Not really, let's coddle her a little bit, you know?
No, not at all. Actually, like between like us, we were three Pro Wrestling Circle students. It was me, Nao Ishikawa, and Yuki Mashiro. I was the one they gave the toughest time to. Like, they went easy on Nao and Yuki, you know? So for me, I mean, there were times where I'm like failing already and I'm getting tired, and they would yell, no, even if you're tired, don't show it. Keep going. If you can't do this, you can't debut. You know?
Why do you think they're so hard on you? Did they see something in you, you think?
I don't know. I think maybe, you know, like a lot of them didn't know my age in the beginning. I think my age was just, you know, it was on the application form for Wrestling Circle, you know, but you write your info, your name and your age, but I don't think they really read it, because there was one time, maybe just a couple months before my debut, it was me and Asahi in the dojo, and Asahi was like, Yappy, how old are you? And I'm like, oh, I'm 39. And her reaction was, that's my impression of her reaction when she found out my age. So, yeah. A lot of them don't know I'm 40. I didn't know I'm 40 until much later when I started yelling it out all the time. Hey guys, I'm 40. They're like, what? She's 40? Yeah.
That's a compliment. It means you look young.
But now it's become a running joke. Like last Saturday, I had a match with Mochi and she kept calling me like old lady in the match.
I'm going to teach her Lola so she can call you Lola.
That's a sexy name in America, though, isn't it?
Some people, yeah. Back in the 70s, it was. Not now.
That bunny in Space Jam. Isn't her name Lola?
Yeah. That's neat.
That's a sexy bunny.
You have a sexy Lola? Bunny that's your tag team partner with sometimes.
What? We do have a sexy bunny. And she's a legit bunny girl, too, you know?
So you're training, you're a hobbyist right now as a wrestler. At what point does it flip in your head that, hey, this is a hobby, this could be something I actually want to debut and do?
Well, on my first day from Wrestling Circle, they were actually surprised at how strong I was. I was stronger than everybody there in that session. And going home, one of the wrestlers, I can't mention her name. She used to be in Ice Ribbon. She's not with Ice Ribbon anymore. We rode the train back together. And she was telling me, Yappy, you can debut. You can be a wrestler. I'm like, no, I don't think so. You can be a wrestler. I had no experience when it came and blah, blah, blah. And I'm a wrestler now. I think you should try to debut. And then so that from that first day, I started thinking, really? Can I debut? Can I debut? And I wasn't really taking her words that seriously until a couple months later, maybe 2 or 3 months later, President calls me to his office. And he was like, Yappy, do you want to debut? So, yeah. And then from then on, they started having me help out during the big matches. When you see a wrestling circle student help out in a big match, that means they've become a prospect. It's still not a guarantee that they will debut, but it says that they're a prospect for debut.
That they've made the switch from being just a hobbyist to potentially being an actual wrestler.
Yeah.
So did it hurt training? I mean, did bumping hurt you? Did running the ropes hurt you?
Well, yeah, running the ropes. Like my first time running the ropes, when I got home, like the next day I had bruises on my back. Because it really hurts. Like the ropes really dig into your back. And then you have to like press against them. It's like, ah! And then you're already bruised and you have to press against them again. Double, ah! And, you know, our coach will make us like run five times, you know, run across five times or 10 times. And it's like the first time hurts. The second time hurts more. The third time, ah, you know, it just gets worse and worse each time. Yeah, and bumping did hurt. Like in the beginning, we have this EVA mat that we practice bumps on. And then when they're confident that you can do it properly, then they say, okay, now try it without the mat. And I was like, sure, I'll do it without the mat. And the first time I did that bump, I'm like, can I have the mat back? Like literally, I stopped breathing when I hit that, when I hit the canvas, like bump. It's the same feeling when I took my first senton from Totoro. Like, my breath just stopped. But then you get used to it, you know? You get used to it a bit. They do exercises where you have to be, where they condition you for pain.
I can only imagine the torture they put you through, yeah. So, how are you managing doing the wrestling circle and then also... You have a job at the same time?
Yeah, I had a job. Luckily, my job allowed me to choose my own schedule. I could work as little or as much as I wanted. So I drastically cut my working hours so I could go to wrestling circle. I think another big factor about people not being able to debut, because when I entered wrestling circle, after me, about maybe around 15 girls came after me. So from November 2017, I came November 2017, 15 other girls came to Wrestling Circle, but only Nao and Yuki have debuted so far out of those 15 girls. Mm. I think also a big factor of it because, you know, Ice Ribbon accepts adults and these adults work. So it's really hard to juggle work and wrestling training.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I drastically cut my hours. So I was freaking poor, man. I cut my salary in half just so I could train for wrestling.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how did you survive? You know, Japan's not the cheapest place to live.
It is not. So I spend a lot of money, not shopping, not entertainment, food. I buy a lot of food. And I don't buy cheap food either. So most of my, like maybe 80% of my money goes to food. So, yeah. So I stopped traveling. I didn't go out as much, you know, thank the heavens for internet. That kept me entertained. So yeah, basically my life became working and wrestling. That was it. Because I couldn't afford to do anything else.
Did you have to go somewhere for your work? I mean, did they see you come beat up and sore and limping in? Or how what were you doing at the time?
Yeah, I mean, I would come to work. Sometimes I would, you know, waddle because my legs are too sore to move properly. And one time I was trying to practice my headstand. So I was doing a headstand in the break room. And then one of my coworkers walked in me have doing a headstand. She's like, what? What? What's on this show? What's on this show? What's on this show? So I actually have that on video because I was taking a video of myself and she opened the door. And I was like, go, somebody was in. Go inside. Yeah, I just tried to put, you know, work wrestling into whatever I'm doing. Yeah, I just wanted to debut as soon as possible.
What do your coworkers think about you training to be a wrestler? They think you're just crazy yappy or what?
I think a couple of them were like, you know, a couple were aloof. A couple were entertained by it. One was very entertained by that whenever she had a client, she's like, do you know Yappy? She's actually training to be a wrestler. And then sometimes a client would come to me, oh, you're Yappy. You're the one who's going to be a wrestler.
So, in general, what do people think about wrestlers over in Japan?
I don't know. I think there is sort of a weirdness to it. Like, it's becoming, like, I think, like, years ago, you know, decades ago, like, Bull Nakano's time, it was so big that they can do a show in Tokyo Dome, and it was like a legit interest. But now it's become a niche interest. So it's kind of like, I was talking to a client once and I told him that I'm a wrestler. Like, this was still when I was still wrestling professionally and also doing my job at the time. This was before I left that job. And he was like, oh, you're a wrestler. Oh, I would be interested in seeing it. But, you know, I don't want people to know I'm watching a wrestling show. You know, that was what he said. And I was like, and he was like, oh, I know, maybe I can suggest it as a company bonding activity, like team building activity. So I have a reason to watch wrestling and people wouldn't think I'm weird for doing it. So there is still that stigma about it, I guess.
That's interesting. Yeah. Same thing here, same thing in America.
Yeah, which I don't understand, because if someone told me they were a wrestler, I'd be like, oh my God, that's so cool, you know? But maybe that's why I'm a wrestler. Maybe I'm not.
In the neighborhood where the dojo's at, do they think you just are just the weird wrestlers, or are you guys pretty much known in that area?
I think it's more like they're used to us. You know, it's like, oh yeah, it's those wrestlers. You know, we don't really get any reactions from anyone anymore. Like, you know, we're cleaning outside the dojo and people walk by, they don't even look at us when they're walking by. So they're used to it.
Yeah, because you guys are kind of off the beaten path a little bit away from the train station. So you guys are a little bit of a walk away.
We're like a 12-minute walk away from the station. In Japan, that's not much. But I guess in America, you guys drive everywhere.
Yeah. So. It's a 1-minute walk to my car.
Yeah. So for me, a walk becomes long if it's more than 20 minutes. So.
Yeah. I'm a slow walker too. So it took me at least 20 minutes to get there. So it seemed really far.
Yeah, well, you know, enjoy the scenery.
Oh, it was awesome. I loved it there, yeah.
It's just train tracks. There's not much to see, but train tracks and noisy crows.
So you're training, you made the switch, thinking about the president's talking to you about debuting. When do you decide, or when, who decides, and how is it decided for you to make your debut?
The thing is, not clear on how that's done. I think it's according to Tsuka's whims, honestly.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think the only one who really had a planned debut was Suzu. I mean, for my time, the only one who had a planned debut was Suzu, because Suzu was doing the week-long training camps. You know, she'd fly in from Kyushu, and then she'd attend the week-long training camp, then go back to Kyushu. And then she planned, like, as soon as she finished junior high school. Like, in Ice Ribbon, you have to finish junior high school before you can go pro. As soon as she finished junior high school, she packed her bags and moved to Ice Ribbon. Like, she lived in the dormitories. And, you know, so that was planned. Like, her debut was carefully planned and scheduled. But for the rest of us, mine was, what was I doing? I was doing chores. And then Saya calls me, Yappy, Tsuka wants to talk to you. I'm like, huh? What? Okay, yeah, what? And Tsuka was like, Yappy, you're helping out at the Yokohama party on May 2nd, right? I'm like, yeah, I'll be there as staff. Actually, you're going to debut. I'm like, huh? What? Wait! You know? And usually, Ice Ribbon debuts, what happens is, first you go through a series of exhibition matches, and this, you know, kind of introduces you to the audience and gives you in-ring experience. And then you present your ring name, and then your debut date is announced. Mine was like, you're gonna debut. Like, where are my exhibition matches? Wait, you know. Like,
how do I get my feet wet first? Yeah.
Exactly. But what they did for the, it's okay, we'll put you in as a peace party member, and then you get your experience at peace party. And then when you're ready, then you do the big matches. So I was on a different path as everyone else. And then with Nao Ishikawa, it was we were doing the Ueno summer shows last year, and she was there as staff. And Tsuka was like, yeah, let's have you do exhibition matches. So exhibition match after exhibition match. And then and after a couple of days, she's like, yeah, I think you can debut. Let's announce your debut. You know?
All right, we're going to go out on a tangent here for a second. Those summer shows.
Uh-huh.
I have to go to one of those one time. They look like so much fun.
They are fun. They're insane. They're equal parts fun and equal parts torture just because of all the heat. But if you get enough beer in you, it'll be fun. Or in my case, I don't drink beer, so I was drinking lemon sours.
Oh. You don't drink strong zeros, do you?
I don't like strong zeros.
Yeah, that's the.
I don't like the taste.
That's the.
I don't know why it's such a popular gaijin drink. I don't like it.
Oh, because it just destroys you. That's why people like to drink it. They're cheap and it destroys you.
I drink 20% alcohol. Okay, ooh. It's not about it destroying me. It's about that taste. Yeah. I don't like how strong zero tastes. There's so much better quality alcohol out there. Come on, guys. Come on.
It's a rite of passage. It's like if you come to America, you're going to drink some Jack and Cokes or whatever. If we go to Japan, we're drinking some strong zeros.
Yeah, it's like whenever like I see like gaijins going crazy over strong zeros, I'm like, oh, strong zeros.
When I went to the Philippines, I drank some San Miggies and things like that. Of course, you're going to drink some Lembanog and things like that, you know?
The thing is, strong zero, I think maybe it has a very strong alcohol taste. I'm going to admit, I am a baby. I don't like the alcohol taste. Like, I drink, like, Bailey's Irish Cream, like, sweet stuff, baby-tasting stuff.
Such girly drinks. Such girly drinks.
Yeah, but come on, Bailey's is, like, 18%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like that. Exactly. Yeah.
I like the girly things with high alcohol content. Doesn't taste like alcohol, but hits you like a truck.
So explain to me what those summer shows are. I mean, because it looks like just a madness is going on the entire time, but kind of explain like the hair washing, the water fights, all that kind of stuff. What is going on?
Us playing around. You know, it's, you know, summertime is supposed to be a fun time. You're supposed to be relaxed and not stressed. Especially this year, it came just after Yokohama Buntai. You know, so we had a lot of stress during, you know, the no audience shows period. You know, it's like, okay, how do we keep the company afloat? What do we do? And then, you know, we finally got to go back to Korakuen Hall. And then we had the big Yokohama Buntai show, which required a lot of planning. And after that, we're just like, whoa, okay, let's do the Ueno shows. You know what? Let's not take this seriously. Like, Ueno shows are never serious matches. We're just there to play around and have fun. And hopefully the audience has fun with us.
And Risa, Sarah, and Rina Yamashita, Yamashita, I'm learning how to pronounce that name. They had their wild match together too.
Ah, you mean the Fantasize belt? Yeah.
Yes.
The title match in Yokohama Buntai? That was insane.
I love
Rina. I got 2 seconds, a death match for the first time. And I was like, please don't get shards in my eyes. Please don't get shards in my eyes. I don't want shards in my eyes.
So I go to Tijuana to watch wrestling sometimes. They do death matches down there.
Oh, nice.
They don't care. They let stuff fly into the crowd. They just don't care.
Yeah, like Dainihon, big Japan pro wrestling, let shards fly into the crowd. But then you have staff kind of using their bodies to block as much as possible. So
yeah, not in Tijuana. It's like, let it fly. Whatever happens, happens.
Risk.
Yeah. People, like, I saw people walking out with like bloody faces and stuff. We're like, I don't know, it's crazy down there. But so I do definitely need to come to one of those shows in the summertime.
Yeah, at least during the Fantast Ice title match, the seconds were in boiler suits. So we had these like thick overalls that protect us from the glass and wearing these super thick gloves so that, you know, we can pick up glass without worrying about the shards. So all I really had to worry about was my face. The thing though, like those boiler suits are super hot. Like it was already summertime and I already had my ring gear and had to wear the suit over my ring gear. Also, in Japan sizes, I am an XL, and the only suit left for me was a medium, okay? And I was like, I'm not a medium. And Akane was like, see if you can squeeze into it. I'm like, what? And so I squeezed myself into that medium, and then I couldn't zip it up because, you know, my stomach is really big. And then Manami Toyota comes up to me like, okay, Yappy, breathe in. And like, and so there I am with the most legendary Joshi of all telling me to breathe in and zipping up my boiler suit. I'm like, if I die, my memory of Manami Toyota zipping up my boiler suit will be one of those things running through my memory as my consciousness fades.
See, that's where we need the camera at, is watching that happen.
But that's, yeah, that's like my that maybe that would be my most treasured Joshi memory, having the most legendary Joshi wrestler zip up my boiler suit as I breathe in.
Speaking but of Akane, yeah. I got to meet Akane when she was here in the States, and I fell in love with her the second I met her. She was such a sweetheart.
Yeah, she's great. Like, she's pretty tough. Like, a lot of us, like a lot of the rookies are kind of afraid of her. When we first enter, like, even Asahi, like, Asahi super loves her now, but like in the beginning, she was the one that Asahi was most afraid of. You know, she just talks in that low voice and you know, so it's like, but she's actually a really good person.
And it's fun. I'm going to tell a personal story. It's funny when you see some of the Joshi wrestlers on TV or streaming or whatever, and they're the bigger of the Joshi, because she's not small, right? Compared to some other. But when I sat next to her, when I did the interview with her in the backseat of a car.
That's all I heard.
Yeah. I mean, just because it's the only quiet place we could do it, right? Because it was this show was at an interesting place here in San Diego. But
yeah.
I'm sure she told you crazy stories about that. But but anyway, but she's tiny compared to like other people. She's tiny, you know, so it's funny when I see some of the Joshi wrestlers.
Compared to American sizes, she's tiny. Yeah, I mean, in Japan, she's not considered small. She's not considered huge.
No.
But she's also not considered small in Japan.
Yeah.
Like, I'm considered huge, you know? Like, they always say, like, when I do deka, 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 you know, deka means huge. And you're always like, yappy deka, yappy deka, you know?
But you're not big.
I remember I was in London. South Hampshire. I was in South Hampshire in the UK, and I was shopping with my friend, and we were just talking. It's like, you know, it's like, I don't know, you know, it's so hard because, you know, I'm so huge, so I can't buy clothes and blah, 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 blah. And then this other girl who just happened to hear the conversation is like, excuse me, I'm just going to cut in. I just like to tell you that you're not huge at all. You're like, what? You know, and that's the first time I've heard somebody tell me that I'm not huge, you know, because in Asia I am huge.
Yeah, I tried to buy like Filipino shirts and stuff and Japanese shirts. That ain't happening for me. I'm huge. You're not huge. I'm huge. And it's hard to find, you know, even like some of my friends that aren't huge Americans, but they want me to bring them back like shirts and stuff. And I like find like XL shirts and they try to put them on and like their head barely fits to the hole.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to shop in Japan too. So, yeah.
So your training. Okay. We're going to go back to your training. And they decide Tsukasa has the bright idea of letting you debut. So, at what point in training, I'm going to go behind the curtain a little bit if you don't mind, or you can tell me no if you don't want to talk about it. At what point in training do they talk about learning moves to actually having matches?
The thing is, like, the wrestling circle does exhibition matches from time to time, like maybe around once a year. So that's your actual, like, that's your first in-ring experience as, you know, as a wrestler. That was my first in-ring experience. And then when finally I was going, it was decided that I was going to debut, then at that time my trainer was Misaki Ohata because Mio was on maternity leave. Then she started, then she was like, okay, now we have to start thinking about your moveset. So she was the one who suggested I use the guillotine drop because, you know, she's partners with Ryo Mizunami. And she started showing me videos of Mizunami's guillotine drop. And she's like, study that. And she gave me a DVD of her retirement show. Study those matches. You know, so you actually don't really have much, you know, you don't really have much training in regards to actually doing fights until your debut is decided.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a lot of learning on the go stuff.
Jump in the deep end and see what happens.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Like, I mean, now, you know, I tried watching my debut match and I couldn't get through it. I was like, I need to stop. I can't watch. The cringe is too much. The cringe is consuming me. Like, I can't do this. You know?
What made you cringe?
Just like how I held myself in the ring, my positioning, my stance, and just, yeah, you know,
So was your debut the one you tagged with Rena?
Yes.
I'm going to say this to the world. I'm in love with Rena Yamashita.
I would actually say this like to people, like when she's not in the room. Okay. Like when I'm talking to someone who I think might would probably not tell her. And I would tell them that Rena Yamashita is like the most perfect person in the world. So yeah.
Before I end the podcast, I'm borderline harassing her now to be on the podcast because she's like one of the other people that I was like from the get-go, from even before the podcast ever was about. She's like somebody I wanted to talk to. So I'm borderline harassing her right now, asking her to be on the podcast. in a nice way.
Good luck.
Yeah. I have a funny Rena Yamashita story. So Tekla and I were at Shinkiba earlier this year. I think it was a seedling show.
Mm-hmm.
Show, one of those two. Anyway, Tekla and I Tekla sat with me because Tekla wasn't on the show. And Rena comes, because Tekla and I are outside talking after the show, and Rena comes and says, Tekla, is that your honey? And I'm like, oh, Rena's so sweet. But it made me laugh just because like I see Rena as a badass and you know this and that, and she just says something so sweet like that, and I was like, oh, I love you, Rena. But I didn't say that.
She is surprisingly sweet. Yeah, because like I thought that she was a badass too, and I was like, really, like I was half excited and half scared to tag with her because I'm like, oh my god, I want to tag with her, but then oh my god, she's gonna think I'm such a dumbass and she'll never want to tag with me again. She'll think I'm so dumb. But then she was so helpful. She was like, before the match, she gave me a lot of pointers. She's like, okay, now try this on me. It's like, what? Okay, try this on me. It's like, really, really? You know, so she's a good mentor. She's really nice.
So is that pretty common? Because in Japan, as far as the women helping each other out to succeed versus, you know, it's you're going to take my spot kind of thought process. Is it more helpful?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I can't talk for all promotions. But that's the way Ice Ribbon is run. And especially, you know, Chiharu is like really, really passionate about keeping a good environment in Ice Ribbon. And like even Mio, because like one time I was there's this period where I was kind of in a slump. I wasn't doing well in my matches. And then Mio came up to me. She's like, are you all right? Like, is something wrong? Like, what's going on? Why? What's affecting your performance? And she was trying to go through different, is it this, and then she's like, are you being bullied? You know, it's like, huh? She's like, is there anybody in Ice Ribbon who's not being kind to you? Because I will talk to them. And I was like, no, it's not that at all. But, you know, she will make, you know, like, Mio, Tsuka, and Chiharu will always make sure that all the girls are being kind to each other. So that kind of attitude is not allowed in Ice Ribbon. Actually, if you as a senpai is caught bullying a kohai, your status gets leveled down.
That's wonderful to have that sort of encouraging environment, you know, because at everyday like office jobs, you don't get that kind of a positive environment sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there's still the usual stresses. I mean, you know, it's an entertainment industry, and, you know, there's a lot of pressure and everybody. Of course, people can get frustrated and things can get hard and, you know, pressure can, like, make us, you know, kind of like have a temporary snap from time to time. But overall, they're really careful about keeping the culture, you know, very family-like and very supportive of everybody.
Yeah, you guys are a team. You guys are there together. You guys are working together to create something special, right?
Exactly.
All right. So one of the most popular wrestlers right now is Tsukushi, and you wrestled her pretty early in your career. And you trained with her, you said before, too. Say that again?
She was my first single match.
Yes. A peace party, right?
Yes.
In Saitama? At the dojo?
Yes, at the dojo.
So I call her a jerk. I think she's a jerk, but she's a she's a wonderful jerk. She's so freaking good too. What's it like to be in the ring with a super, super talented young lady like that?
Well, she keeps you on your toes. You know, you can't just do the same thing with Tsukushi all the time. She's going to find like other ways to do a match. Like she'll try to bust out something new all the time. So yeah, I mean, of course, you know, we have our signature things that we always do. You know, keep your hands close to yourself because if you don't, Tsukushi's feet are going to find them. You know, stuff like that. But then there'll probably be one or two things like, oh, this is new, you know. So she likes to be creative.
She's fun to watch. I mean,
she's been in the industry for like how many years now, you know. She's really tiny. She looks like a baby, but she's a veteran. So
what do you think about that? That's a question I like ask people is, what do you think about people starting to wrestle so, so young?
Like Suzu?
Yeah. Well, even Ram and people like that as well, who've wrestled since they were children.
Yeah, I mean, I one part of me is a little jealous. You know, I wish I started younger, you know. It's great that they already figured out so young what they want to do for the rest of their lives. But also, you know, some that start out young, it becomes just a period in their life because, you know, after 10 years and, you know, after 10 years and, oh, you're still in your early 20s, there's so much life left that you can go off and do other things, you know?
So when the younger people like Suzu are training and things like that, I mean, are they doing everything like full impact right away? You know, like their bodies are still not fully matured. Yeah.
I mean, it depends. Oh, you mean full impact, like in a match, like receiving full impact?
Yeah, just like taking bumps and doing all that kind of stuff. Their bodies are not fully formed yet. You know, I have questions about it. I mean, I've never done it before, but you know, it just seems interesting to me that somebody so young, and even younger than Suzu, who've done it in the past, you know, that their bodies are getting beaten up at such an early age.
Yeah, well, it's done case by case. You know, in the case of Yuki Mashiro, I tried to be gentle with her. Like, I had a match with her yesterday, which will air tonight. Oh, but not when you broadcast this. But anyway, I had a match with her yesterday, which was Sunday in Skip City, and I did just enough to get her down. You know, I didn't do my big moves on her. I thought that maybe if I did my Bronco on her, it might kill her. So if I did a choke slam on her, she might never get up. So I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna do what is required to get this kid down. You know, but then Suzu, I can go all out on Suzu. So it's case by case, you know, each person is different. Each person's body is different. But then you do realize long ago, Ice Ribbon would take people who are super, super young and we debut people that are super, super young. Now we accept, you know, we accept really, really young people into wrestling circle, but they don't get to debut until they finish junior high school. Now we have an age limit for debuting. we don't put them into real matches until they reach a certain age.
Yeah, that's probably, it's a smart thing to do, I think, for the longevity of the person as well.
Yeah, although I think that very young thing, it was a product of, it was the brainchild of somebody who used to run Ice Ribbon. Yeah, mm-hmm. That person isn't with Ice Ribbon anymore, so things kind of changed a little bit.
Yeah, but that seems to be like a tradition in Joshi wrestling in general. You know, get them early and then get them out early too. You know, when they had back in the day, they had the age limit, the 23, 24, whatever year old what was, yeah. You had to retire, you know.
Like idol culture, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, now it's like, you know, you get them as young as 15 and then they wrestle as long as they like.
Yeah, that's probably the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So you early on, a couple months in, you break your jaw. What happened?
Well, I was in a match. It was in Yokohama Radiant Hall. It was, I think it was a 4-versus-4 match. Was it a 3-versus-3 or 4? One of those. And actually, I watched the playback of that. You can actually hear when my jaw snapped. Mm. So I got kicked in the face by actually a very, very wonderful popular wrestler. So it's like oh yeah, she broke my jaw. Yeah, that, see that wonderful queen right there, she broke my jaw anyway. So actually when my jaw broke, I didn't know it was broken. I know it hurt like hell, but I was like, I still got the rest of the match to do. So I, you know, I didn't tell anyone to stop the match or anything, so I just kept going in there and did it until the end. And I went upstairs and my mouth wouldn't stop bleeding. So I stuck some cotton into my mouth and popped a couple painkillers and went back out to do my seconding duties. And during the break where, you know, there's a break time where you sell portraits and the fans were trying to talk to me and it was like, oh, sorry, I can't talk anymore. I can't talk right now, you know. And at the end, you know, we cleaned up, everything's packed, we're getting ready to leave. And I pulled the cotton out of my mouth and I laughed. I'm like, haha, the bleeding still hasn't stopped. And suddenly, Sera, she almost went exorcist on me. Like her head just went right at me. The bleeding hasn't stopped. I'm like, yeah, it hasn't stopped. Hospital, hospital. You know, and suddenly like Chihara was on her phone looking for a hospital. Bunny was like, you know, like searching dentists and everything. And then, yeah, Bunny took me to a dentist. We had an x-ray and then, oh my God, it's broken. She started texting everyone, Yappy's jaw is broken, Yappy's jaw is broken. And she brought me to a bigger hospital. And then at that time, after the Ice Ribbon show, there was another show. I forgot which promotion it was. But, you know, usually Ice Ribbon will share a venue with a friend promotion. And so Shacho was there, president was there. And so as soon as that show was over, the president, like, went to the hospital. And Bunny and the president stayed with me until the full diagnosis was made and the decision to operate was made. So like the president stayed until like, you know, until night, and he paid for everything. Like he was, you know, it's really sweet. He's like a dad. He's our dad.
That must make you feel good then, you know, for them to care about you that much.
The president does his best to take care of everybody, you know, like, yeah, he is our dad. We make jokes about that. Even like, you know, I'm in the dojo and I'm walking barefoot. And he's like, Yappy, why are you walking barefoot? And I'm like, wow, even my dad doesn't complain when I walk barefoot.
Are there hard feelings when something like that happens, or was it just a accident?
No, not at all. Like so the one who kicked me, she was texting me a lot after that, like, Yappy, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, you know. I was actually surprised because, like, well, not surprised, but I remember seeing somewhere that some fan mentioned that she was said to have attitude problems, and she's this senpai, like, this way above me, popularity level way above me, just status, just, you know, levels and levels and levels above me. And here she is groveling to me over text, apologizing profusely for breaking my jaw. You know, she's like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, you know. So you know, she really felt bad.
So how long did it take you to get back in the ring and start training again?
Let's see. I broke my jaw in July. I was back in the ring in October.
Was there, were you pretty confident when you got back in?
Well, it was still hurting. So my opponents were told that, you know, I mean, Yabby's back in the ring, but, you know, keep in mind that she just recovered from a broken jaw.
Okay.
Yeah. But no. I was good enough to fight. I mean, the doctor said it would, like, you can get back in the ring if you want. I would prefer it if you rested a little more, but I guess you can go back. You know. But I started going back into training like a month after I broke my jaw. So I broke my jaw, and then I got my operation, and then when I got the bolts out, I showed up at the dojo, and it was like, Yabby's back. And then I remember, like, the Tsukushi came up to me and she hugged me. She's like, Yabby's back, you know. And I'm like, what are you here for? Like, I'm training. Huh? Can you train? But they started me, you know, I started off really gently. Like, even doing a squat for some reason hurts my jaw. I didn't know why.
It's your blood pressure kicking up and...
I guess. But, you know, at any time, like, you know, like, they were very adamant about, like, the minute your jaw hurts, like, even the slightest bit of pain from any activity, you stop. So the first time I came back to the dojo, I only did, like, a third of the activities. And then, you know, from there, slowly building it up. Yeah. Now I get kicked in the face once in a while, get elbowed accidentally in the face. No big deal. I got plates, these jaw. That this jaw is reinforced, no problem.
Bionic woman.
Actually, when I was, you know, prepping for my surgery, I asked the doctor, where are you going to do the incision? He's like, oh, we're going to do it inside your mouth, so don't worry, there'll be no scars. It's like, can you do the incision on my face so that I can get a cool scar? And the doctor's like, no. Oh, okay, got shot down really fast on that one.
Like, this crazy woman, what is she thinking?
Yeah, oh well, no cool scar for me.
No, you don't need a scar on that face.
I really wanted one.
You're crazy, Yappy. So when foreigners come in and come into Ice Ribbon in Peace Party, are you like the person that kind of is the unofficial interpreter for any foreigners that come in into...
I am the official liaison for foreigners that come to Ice Ribbon. Whenever a wrestler from an outside promotion, like sometimes we get emails from wrestlers in other countries saying that they're interested in, you know, coming to Ice Ribbon, immediately President will forward the email to me and it's like, you talk to her. So I have to write it, hi, this is Yappy, and I'm the contact for this, and tell me about yourself, and blah, 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 you know. And sometimes I think of doing some scouting on my own, like, this person looks like they'd be a good fit, and like, you know, like, yeah. And then also I'm the one who does the background checks, you know, like someone's interested in Ice Urban, I look at them, look at their social media, look at their matches, and just, you know, see if they'd be, you know, like, not just their ring style, but also, you know, like, personally, will they be a good fit in the culture of the dojo?
So, and you also, you mean people who've ordered merchandise from Ice Ribbon and have dealt with social media and stuff?
I am the one running the international shop. I handle everything myself. I do the orders. I pack everything. I bring them to the post office. So if there's a backlog, I'm sorry. I'm just one person.
No, but you've been so helpful. And I think the word tool is not the right word to use, but you're an excellent tool for a company to have, you know, a bilingual person like you. I think it's invaluable for somebody like companies like that to have right now. If they want to grow and expand internationally, they have to have somebody like you on their roster, I think.
That's great. I got my New Year's wish. Like, you know, Hatsu, what's it? Is it Hatsu? No, not Hatsumode. What's it called? I forgot the word for it, but it's the first visit to the shrine. On New Year's Day, you go to the shrine and then you can make a wish. You pray and make a wish. So the other year, New Year's Day, I went to the shrine. I got a wishing tablet and I wrote, I wish to debut this year. And I debuted. And then this year I went to the same shrine. I was like, okay, I guess these sumo gods like sumo wrestlers too. So I'll make a wish to the sumo gods again. And I wrote, I wish to become a useful person to Ice Ribbon. And maybe I am a little bit useful now.
You're absolutely useful. Yeah, I honestly think that other companies are not doing themselves a service by not having, and it's easier said than done to find somebody bilingual that live there. But I think especially what you guys did during COVID, as far as having you on commentary and things like that, I think that's so valuable for companies to have. And I think you're very valuable for Ice Ribbon.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I'm usually just a background person, you know. I don't draw so much attention to myself, so.
That's what I'm here for, to draw attention to you. That's why I wanted you on the podcast, because you deserve attention.
I'm sorry.
No, but even starting the English Ice Ribbon Twitter account, I think that's invaluable as well, and you're the one that takes care of all that as well.
Yes, I'm also the one running that account. I forgot about that. Yes.
But it's nice because, you know, the lame people like me that don't speak Japanese but want to keep up with storylines and things going on, you're our tool, you're our resource or whatever you want to call it to help us along.
Can you imagine this out of context? You know, like, oh, in this podcast, Eric talks about what a tool Yappy is.
Yes. I'm not wrong. I'm not wrong.
I'm a tool. Anyway, well, I'm glad that people appreciate it, because I guess, you know, I thought that, you know, Ice Ribbon is such a good product. And the thing is, outside of Japan, most people know just one Joshi company. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a bigger company than us. And, you know, they have a lot of like foreigner access. So mostly they only know that company. I'm like, we're a good product too. And I think, you know, I think we can be seen. We already have some foreign fans coming, you know, the really hardcore fans would fly to Japan and watch the shows, who know more about Ice Ribbon than I do. So, you know, it's like, you know, we can bring this to more people. And at first, you know, I think at first they weren't really thinking, yeah, that's not really, you know, we don't really have a market so much outside. And I just did what I can to show them that there is, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. from like gently telling them, hey, there are a couple of fans who are hoping to get Merc, but, you know, or we don't deliver overseas. So I was wondering if I can just take this order and process, like, oh, sure. Okay. You can take that order. Started with two orders and started with two more. And it became this whole thing until finally President called me and was like, Yappy, we'd like to start an international site and we'd like you to run it. So it's like, yes, 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 yes. And then after that, I was like, okay, well, I also think that we need an English Twitter account. So like, okay, go ahead. Yes.
I think you should start a podcast too. I really do.
Well, I have those videos that I do sporadically that I post on my Instagram of just me rambling about dumb stuff related to Ice Ribbon or wrestling.
No, but I honestly, the other company we talk, the bigger company you're talking about, I've always mentioned that as a gateway drug. You know, that's how people find Joshi now.
It's like the Naruto of Joshi Pro Wrestling, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And then they find...
It's not a bad product. It's a good product, which got people into the genre, and then they start looking for more, you know?
Yeah, and so that's what I always tell people, like, go find Ice Ribbon, go find these other companies, you know, because, you know, the other ones, it's nice. It's they've got very talented women, but there's also super-duper talented women over here as well. Have you seen Tsukushi?
Like, I'm not calling them bad, because they're not bad. No. But there are others. There are choices.
Have you seen Suzu? Have you seen
Yuki Himaya. Maya Yuki.
Maya Yuki. Yuki. And Yuki.
Yuki. Yeah. Yuki and Yuki.
But yeah, and then have you seen Tsukasa? I mean, just how smooth. Tsukasa Fujimoto, I think, is just the smoothest, amazing wrestler I've almost ever seen, I think. But anywho, so at what point, Yappy, did you feel comfortable wrestling? Like when you felt like, okay, I belong here.
When did I start feeling like I belonged? It took a while because I actually didn't, like, even after I debuted, I still felt like, you know, I was, you know how you, like, imagine, like, there are these bunch of adults playing a game, and then there's this five-year-old who wants to play, and they're like, okay, you can play, here you go, and then they let her win, and then they get rid of her. Okay, she's happy now, like, we can go ahead and continue with our game. I felt like that five-year-old for the longest time, you know?
That they just let you play along, you were playing wrestler with them?
Yeah, exactly. So when did I really feel like I belonged there? I think maybe it was around the COVID shows. Because when we were doing the COVID shows, there was no audience. So I was just able to focus on the ring itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we were kind of closed off from the rest of the world, you know, so we were kind of our inner little bubble. And from there, I was able to focus on myself. So, yeah, I think maybe. I think it may be also one of those slow processes where you can't exactly draw the line of when it happened.
But now now when you jump in the ring, you feel super comfortable. You're ready to go.
I do. I mean, there's still times where after the match, I felt like I didn't do as well as I could have. And I would be in a dark place for a couple of days after that. I'd be like, oh, crap. And I just, you know, I'm in my head for a while. And then the thing is, like, you know, Ice Ribbon does a lot of shows. Like, maybe if we did, like, a show once a month, then I would be in my head for that entire month and probably I'd quit wrestling. But with Ice Ribbon, we do, like, 2 to 3 shows a week. So I'm only allowed to be in my head for a day or two. And then we're having a fight again. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to redeem myself. I'm going to erase I'm going to erase what happened to me last Wednesday. I'm going to do well this Saturday. And then that really drives me to do really well. Like, yes, okay, self-redeem. Redemption has happened. I am okay now. Yeah. You know, and also during those, like, COVID, I think maybe it was the period where Mio pulled me aside and she was like, Yappy, you have been doing really well lately. I'm proud of you. And I was like, so, yeah.
So how did you enjoy doing commentary during those COVID shows?
It was really great. It was fun. I enjoyed it a lot. Although I was really careful not to talk over Saya so much, you know, because, like, there are two languages speaking at the same time. And I didn't want it, you know, I didn't want people to be like, oh my God, I can't understand anything, no matter the language, because they're talking over each other so much. So I was very conscious of that. But I also, you know, wanted to give enough information to the audience as much as I can. But also I didn't want to alienate the Japanese audience. So sometimes I would switch to Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was really trying my best to keep a balance. And then I really, really enjoyed doing the commentary. Although at one point, Mio was like, this is too much pressure on you, which it was, because it's like, I'm doing the commentary, but then I have a match, you know, and it's like, both are like, okay, I'm doing the commentary, but oh my God, I have a match. And, you know, I'm trying to psych myself. And she did feel that I was, you know, feeling a lot of pressure from it. So eventually she said, Yappy is a wrestler, let her wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. No, even like the announcements on, like, the portraits and things like that, I found that super helpful. And I think a lot of people did. I mean, people I've talked to found that super helpful too, just the way, you know, you guys just did your announcements and stuff like that as well during the shows.
Sorry? What announcements on the portraits?
Yeah, no, just the general announcements they always do, like, on the shows and stuff. And you were doing it, and Saya would do it in Japanese, and you would do it in English, you know.
Oh.
Just the general stuff like that, I think, is super helpful.
Oh, I'm glad that was helpful. Like, I didn't know which were helpful and which were like, okay, get on with it. We don't need this part translated. It's hard to find a balance.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it is. And I have no idea what Saya is saying, but she's my favorite announcer in the world.
Well, the way she speaks is very fun.
Oh, yeah, I love it. I love it. I love it. So, so the COVID, how difficult was it for just surviving during COVID in Japan? What was it like as a person and as a company to weather the storm of the COVID outbreak?
Well, of course, like as a company, you had to do a lot of brainstorming, like what can we do? You know, what new thing can we do to keep, to keep the payroll going? Because mm-hmm. As a company, it's not just you want your company stay afloat. You have people relying on you to live, right? We have employees. So, you know, that's the thing. And then president, aside from thinking up, ways that we can keep company afloat, he was also looking at government resources to help us personally stay afloat. It's like, okay, so there's this stimulus check for freelancers. You can apply for this. And also the government's going to do this. Everybody, don't forget to apply for this check if you're eligible for it. You know, he was constantly giving us updates on what we can do. And then, yeah, also like, what can we do? So I guess there's like, okay, Yappy, do you want to take more international orders? But then the post office shut down. But then it's so lucky that there were so many people who, you know, aside from wanting to get work, they also just wanted to support Ice Ribbon to help keep us afloat. So like, yeah, here's the money. Send it when you can. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge help. Like, I don't know if people know how much that helped us. Because, yeah, it was a series of events that led to me actually having a salary job in Ice Ribbon running the shop. Because before that, I was still working, like I was working at Ice Ribbon and then also working at my other job. And during COVID, my job shut down and they closed. And so if it weren't for the series of events of fans wanting to support Ice Ribbon and fans getting work to support Ice Ribbon and being patient about it and then, you know, looking for other ways that they can quote unquote throw money at Ice Ribbon, they gave me a job. They saved my life. I would, if that didn't happen, I would be back in the Philippines now because I couldn't have afforded to stay in Japan anymore.
Yeah, and I was one of those people that did that as well. You tried to find ways to your company and other companies as well. I never lost my job, and I tried to find, you know, I had the means to help out, so I was trying to find ways to help out when I could. And I think that's one of the good things of the humanity of people, the understanding of people, that they know what you guys are and how not huge you guys are, you know, how you're, it's a mom and pop shop in a lot of ways, you know, a lot of these Joshi companies, and just the respect the fans have for you guys to do something like that, you know, to knowing, I mean, I'm going to speak for myself now, knowing that I knew I wasn't going to get the portraits for a long time. And Yappy, I don't need six Yappy portraits, but I do it to support you guys, you know?
Thank you. No, it's, I mean, I remember that all the time. Like I'm never going to forget that. It's the fans who kept me in Japan.
Yeah.
If it weren't for the fans. Yeah. I actually moved out of my apartment during COVID. I saw it coming. It's like, okay, if this keeps going, I won't be able to keep this apartment. So I actually moved to a cheaper apartment. Cheaper, but like so much bigger and so much nicer. It was like the stars just aligned that I got this perfect and huge apartment for almost half the rent that I was getting. And it's closer to the dojo. So because I was foreseeing that I won't be able to afford my other apartment anymore. And then I started brainstorming, okay, how do I keep myself afloat? How do I keep myself afloat? And then, of course, I get money from home, from the family business. And so my mom sent me some money to keep myself afloat. But that could have been only enough for like 2 or 3 months. And I don't want to keep asking my family for money. You know, at 40 years old, I can't be leeching off the family business. And yeah, I thought, okay, if this keeps going and I can't earn any more money, I'm just going to have to quit and go back to the Philippines and live at home. Mm. But the fans kept me here. The fans' support for Ice Ribbon turned into, you know, I was like a, what do you call that? The word has left me. Where? Crossfire. It was it. I got caught in a happy crossfire.
Yes.
It affected me so greatly, so positively. The fans supporting Ice Ribbon unknowingly also kept me in Japan.
No, yeah, it's people who rally in tough times, and I think the Joshi fans are so, I mean, you know, the Joshi fans are so loyal and so, you know,
passionate
and just, you know, wanting to help and wanting you guys to succeed and wanting, you know, to help any way they can. You know, I think that's
did.
Yeah, and that's one of the beautiful things about, you know, Joshi, the Joshi fans, is just how loyal and passionate and helpful they are sometimes.
Yeah, and you know, after that, you know, when we were doing the live shows, when we were doing the live streams, after a while, that's where President realized that there is a market for a pay-per-view model.
Mm-hmm.
And that pay-per-view helped us from going under, because I mean, now we're selling shows at a third of the capacity. You know, I mean, COVID-19 is not over. We're allowed to have shows with audiences again, but with restrictions. You know, we can't sell out the entire house. So we're only selling a third of the tickets that we usually sell. And the pay-per-view helps so much, because that helps us make up for the seats that we weren't able to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, oh my God, thank you so much, guys. we still have jobs because of you guys.
But you guys create that as well. You guys create the want to help. You guys create the relationship. You guys are the ones that are building it. I talk about Joshi, you know, being customer service centric. You know, all these Joshi companies are all very much about, you know, taking care of the customer. And when you take care of a customer, they give back to you. And that's the time that the fans gave back to you guys, is because you guys treated us so well before that.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. So, Yepi, if nobody or if somebody who's listening now has never seen you wrestle, what match do you think they should go and watch you wrestle in?
Ha! That's a tough question. Huh. Let me see. Actually, I got beat up a lot, but I think my match with Kurumi was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't see me win, and you don't see me succeed a lot, but I think I took those hits pretty well. But it was actually my recent match. It was mostly a foreigners match. It was me and Tekla versus Masha and Yuki. It was a short segment, but I think I put up a decent fight against Masha. And
I love Masha. She's a sweetheart too.
She's great. Like, I met her for the first time that day. I mean, she's been friends with Tekla for a while, mm-hmm. but then I met her for the first time that day. She's savage in the ring. I do hope she comes back and I can, like, you know, get my revenge on her later on.
What's it like having, you know, you have your core group of Ice Ribbon people. How fun is it to have people from outside of Ice Ribbon to come in to do shows with you guys?
It's great because, you know, they add a different vibe to the environment. Like, I was really happy that Madeline became a Peace Party regular. She's really fun to be around. You know, she's a lot of energy.
I love her.
She's great. I love her a lot. I teach her English whenever I can. You know, she's so receptive to learn. She really wants to learn English. And then, you know, you have recently we started getting girls from Seedling join us. And before, like maybe last year, Marvelous would send their rookies to us a lot. But these days we haven't been getting a lot of Marvelous rookies in our shows lately. But yeah, like Seedling's been sending their rookies, and yeah, Madeline, and you know, it's just nice. Peace Party days, it's usually a very happy environment because we're all rookies, you know. We're not afraid of each other because nobody is really like such a high senpai, you know. You know, I mean, Japanese culture and all, you gotta be all, you know, you gotta revere the senpais. So we kind of have to like watch how we act around the senpais, but Peace Party, we're all rookies, so we're like, wah ha 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 ha, you know, we're all like noisy during training and stuff.
No, I like to see like Mari Manji and Akari as well come into Peace Party. Mm-hmm. Those I love seeing that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah, Mari Manji is really nice. Yeah, Akari's great too. So yeah, it brings a nice, you know, different vibe to the dojo.
Is it nice just seeing a different face every once in a while too, to, in the ring?
It's nice too, yeah, because it's like, you know, like you can only fight somebody so many times, right? So it's like, mm-hmm. okay, someone new, like what can I bust out against this person? So now you have to strategize a little bit more. Yeah, so.
So when's Yappy gonna venture out and hit other company shows?
I'm honestly a little too afraid to. mostly because, like, I don't know what the culture is like in other promotions. I don't want to, you know, when you go out to another promotion as an Ice Ribbon roster member, you are representing the company. And I'm just so scared I'm going to screw something up and embarrass Ice Ribbon. So, we'll see. We'll see. Actually,
I'm giving you the silent treatment right now because you're wrong.
I was supposed to actually have my first venture out to another promotion, and I was gonna fight a legend. And I remember the president telling me, she's been a wrestler longer than you've been alive. And I'm like, I've been alive for 40 years. Oh my God. You know? And I was so excited for that match. But then COVID-19 happened and the event got canceled. So I haven't ventured out yet since then. We'll see. Someday in the future, maybe.
So tell us about some of the roster members. People like to hear about some of the roster members there at Ice Ribbon. Just give us your opinion on some people. We're going to start with, we've already talked about Tsukushi. We've already talked about Akane. Tell us about Suzu. Tell us about what makes Suzu so special.
Suzu, oh God, that's a crazy kid. The thing is, like, you know, when you first look at Suzu, like when I first saw Suzu, I was like, oh, this is just a, you know, she's just a kid. Especially if you look at her photos when she was a trainee, she's just a kid. Mm-hmm. And even like when, you know, it's like Tsuka saw that, you know, there was really something special about her. But the thing is, like, she usually acts super normal. And then you talk to her and it's like, yeah, I like death matches. Oh, yeah, I do that. Oh, yeah, I do this. Like, okay, this kid is crazy. So, and, you know, she's got a lot of ambition with her. I remember we were talking about something and like, the difference between like Suzu and Asahi. Like, Asahi is really a kid, you know, like they're both the same age, but Asahi is 17 years old. She is a high school student. She is growing up. And that's super charming, you know, like that's one of Asahi's charms, that she's such a young girl growing up, finding herself in the world. But when you look at Suzu, she's 17, but she is an adult in a 17-year-old's body. Like, even like, you know, the way she carries herself in the dojo, her work ethic, her response to situations, she's an adult. And then you get this certain moment, and, oh, suddenly she's 17 years old, you know? So, like, oh, look at Suzu, so mature, so responsible. So, she's 17. Okay, pick that kid up from the floor.
How do you think she's handled the responsibility so far and being the face of the promotion right now and doing the interviews and stuff? How do you think she's handled all that?
I think she's handling it really well. You know, she's being very responsible about it and she's not letting it get into her head. You know, like the way she speaks to her kohais, you know, she never has this arrogant air about her. You know, even like sometimes I would make a mistake in the dojo, you know, like sometimes I thought I understood what they were trying to tell me, but there was that one piece of that sentence that I didn't quite get and I ended up screwing stuff up, you know, and she could be in this position where she can just yell at me and call me a dumbass, but she doesn't, you know, mm-hmm. She just like, okay, Yappy, this is what you did wrong and okay, let's fix it. So, yeah, and she takes responsibility for a lot of things. And when there's a job that has to be done, she'll do it. You know, she doesn't care what her status is. She'll clean the toilets if she has to. So that kid has, like, really good work ethic and really, like, a really good mental, like, what do you call that? Like,
makeup? Mental makeup?
Yeah, mental makeup for somebody her age. Because yeah, at 17, you know, a person can be so fragile in their teen years. Mm-hmm. Especially in the entertainment industry. An entertainment industry can really eat up at you mentally. And she's handling everything so beautifully, I think. I couldn't have been able to do that at 17.
How have you handled it at 40? You know, the social media and all the comments and things like that. You know, how do you handle that kind of stuff?
Ah, well, like I said, I'm 40, so been there, done that. You know.
So it's in one ear, out the other. You don't care.
I'm gonna lie if I say that nothing affects me. It does. But then over the years, I've become much better at picking myself up after it. You know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean. Yeah, I still have to give myself a talk. I still have to turn off social media for, you know, a couple hours just to, you know, gather myself. You know, I'm not going to say, it's all, you know, water off my back or whatever. No, it will affect me, but I am more equipped to deal with it. But that's also, you know, the whole social media thing. That's why our wrestlers who are under 18 or under 20 generally do not have social media accounts, because we feel like maybe they're not prepared for it yet. And also, you know, the internet world is kind of, you know, a jungle, and we don't want people like coming at them and when they're not prepared for it.
No, I think that's wise. I think that's very wise to protect them. You know, sometimes you need to be protected from yourself, you know? So I think it's a wonderful thing to do, because I'm 40 something years old as well. And, you know, and I get the negative comment about my podcast, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm terrible. I'm the worst, you know, and then I have to talk myself out of it too. And if I was 17 and I got the criticism that I get now, I would not be able to handle it either.
Yeah. Even me, like, you know, if I had a match that I feel did not go so well, like I haven't even seen any comments on social media yet the voices in my head will start making up comments. Telling me that, oh, this is probably what people in social media are saying about you. And I'm like, you know.
Creating things that don't exist, right?
Exactly. But yeah. I mean, they probably do exist, but I haven't seen them yet. But I'm already prepping myself to see them. It's like, just, you know, you have to like get yourself out of your head. And, you know, just because I'm 40 doesn't mean I'm a master at it. But I am better equipped for it. But the young ones, you know, like when Suzu was first allowed to have her social media account, you know, like she had a talk with the senpais. Okay, like this is what you have to be careful of, and this is what can happen, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like what to do about it. And if you feel anything negative, tell us right away. You know, like we just want to give her, you know, you just want to tell her that, you know, we're here. And we're going to help her, you know, cope with whatever she encounters on social media.
Yeah, and I think that's real important, you know, to teach the younger wrestlers. I mean, you can teach them how to wrestle, but you teach them how to handle life as well. Because it's hard to train people to get prepared for criticism. It's hard to train people to get prepared to answer questions from media and things like that. That's not the part of, you know, the X's and O's of being a wrestler and learning how to do a moonsault or whatever. That's a whole different, even interacting with fans, I think is, you know, the meet and greets and the signing the portraits and stuff. I think that takes some time, and you have to learn how to do that as well.
Yeah. Like, especially, you know, like me, I'm like, I'm such an introvert. I'm a really talkative introvert, but I'm an introvert nonetheless. And I can actually tire myself out. And then afterwards, I'll just shut down, you know? So it's like, I had to really like, and the thing is like, I love interacting with the fans, but also I have to like learn how to maintain my energy interacting with the fans. But then also I had to learn how to cope with not having fans, you know? So that's another thing too. It's like, you know, there, you know, some wrestlers are going to have longer lines than others. Some wrestlers are not going to have lines at all. And you have to be equipped to deal with being the wrestler who has no line.
Yeah, that's a mind screw, you know, a little bit for people.
Yeah, you know, like they say, like, you know, one good way to destroy yourself is to compare yourself to others.
Yep.
But then when the comparison is right in your face, it's really hard to ignore.
Yeah.
You know, so it is. It's a lot of, you know, it is a lot of mental, I'm losing my words.
No, but it's a mental, it's a struggle. It's a mind F, I don't want to say the bad word, but you know, it's a mental struggle. And to see somebody you who've lived a life like you have outside of wrestling, for people that are just coming in and as children and learning to be wrestlers and maybe not having that line yet either, it must be a very much a struggle for them to mentally wrap their head around it.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, it is the entertainment industry, and the entertainment, you know, like, of course, you know, we grow up being told that we shouldn't care about what people think of us. But then the entertainment industry, your livelihood depends on what people think of you, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's like you have to find that balance of, like, you know, caring about what people think and also not caring about what other people think. It's hard.
All right, so a couple more people I'm going to ask you about before we leave. You've been so kind with your time, but let me ask you about a few more people. Hamaku and Ibushi, the mother and daughter.
Hamako.
Hamako and Ibuki. Tell me about that. How that dynamic works in training. How that dynamic works, mother and daughter being in a business together.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, them being parent and child. You know, like, it is admirable how both of them really handle everything professionally, you know, like, sometimes, you know, during, we are having meetings and then one group decides that they're going to be having a meeting at this time. And then another group will be having this meeting. And I, you know, Ibuki's there and like, oh, Ibuki, what time is your mom coming? I don't know. She has her own schedule. You know, it's like, I'm not my mother's keeper. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're very perfect. They're very separate entities. But, you know, still, they're still mother and daughter. So you will still see Hamako care for her daughter. And the thing is, like, you know, Hamako is a mother, so she has those motherly instincts. So she would sometimes act like a mother to everybody, including me, who is 3 years older than her. You know? Sometimes, you know, she'd be like, Yappy, are you okay? How do you feel? Did you eat breakfast? And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm like, wait, you're older than me. Why are you asking me this? Why are you acting like my mom? But I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Like, I like having you as my mom, even if you're younger than me. Yeah, I guess the thing is, like, you know, in Joshi wrestling, more than your age, it's your career length that really affects how people talk to you. So, you know, Hamako is a 12-year veteran. I'm a year and a half in. So she is, you know, that dynamic plays strongly over our ages. So she does treat me like a daughter.
and you have to play the part of being the daughter then.
I like it. I like it. I like being mothered.
So Yuki, tell me about Yuki. She's one of the best wrestlers in the world. And she's amazing.
She is great. She's very charismatic. And the thing is also, she is so good to her kohais, you know. Of course, we have these things, you know, like one of the first things Suzu did was block her on when she got her Twitter account. But to those that she is not having in-ring conflicts with, she is really kind. Like, even you see, like, the way she will talk to the fans, you know, when we have the live streams and the way she talks to the fans on camera, that the she talks to everybody so sweetly and so sincerely. And the way she talks to the fans is the same way that she talks to her kohais. And sometimes I would come to her for advice. I would come to her with a question, also because she speaks English. Mm-hmm. So if there's something that I find difficult to say in Japanese, I would come to her and like, Yuki-san, can I ask you a question about something? And she's like, yeah, sure. You know, and she'd really listen and she'd try her best to give advice. So she's a really good senpai to have.
Do you think there's an advantage to having a life before wrestling to people? You know, she had a career before wrestling. Is there an advantage to that, you think?
Well, personally for me, I think so. Because, you know, I feel like if I came into this at 15 and this is my first venture out in the real world, it would have really screwed me up a lot, I think. Mm. Of course, there are, you know, these kids like Suzu who can handle it really well. But it takes a lot of mental strength. So having, you know, other life experiences and knowing what the real world is, knowing how the world works, and knowing that the world doesn't work the same way in every part of it, it does equip you to deal better with the mental challenges of.
Yeah, and I think that's, yeah, I think it's very important as well to either those people that like their first job and they think this is what it's supposed, this is what it's like everywhere. It's like, no, you got it good right now. You don't know you have it good, but you have it good right now.
Yeah, it's similar to Tsukushi because, you know, Tsukushi started wrestling so early, right? Mm-hmm. And Tsukushi would always say, Tsukushi baka, Tsukushi baka. She would say that about herself. She thinks she's stupid because she doesn't really have a world outside wrestling so much. Like, her entire world is wrestling. You know, I told her, no, Tsukushi, you're a genius in the ring. She's like, yes, yes, I'm a genius in the ring, but I'm stupid in the real world. You know, like, I remember Yuki Mashiro, she went on a school trip to Singapore, and then Tsukushi's like, oh, Singapore! Where is Singapore? You know, that's how closed off she is from the rest of the world. Her entire world is wrestling.
In a certain way, so, that's kind of sad.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's, you know, because, yeah, she started wrestling when she was 12. And she's, what, 23 now, you know? So I think, like, having, you know, experience in the real world before you go into wrestling is a bit helpful, too.
All right, last person I'm going to ask you about before we get out of here is Tsukasa Fujimoto. I think she's the smoothest wrestler I might have ever seen in my life. Just how crisp and smooth she is in the ring. What is she, one, in the ring, talk about her a little bit, and then talk about her outside the ring as well, please.
In the ring, well, okay, that's just like whatever you do, like do your best not to get your back kicked because those really hurt. You feel that thing go, you know, it first hits your spine and then you feel it travel up the rest of your spine. Yeah, and she's really quick. She's quick on her feet and she's light. She runs around like she's 10 pounds, you know. So she flies around the ring. She's especially for me, you know, I'm more of a powerhouse style. I rely on my weight and my strength a lot. So I gotta, you know, but before I can like use my strength and my weight on her, I gotta catch her. So it is a challenge for me. It's like, okay, how am I going to fight Tsukasa Fujimoto? You know.
So when you're in the ring with her, do you feel pressure to perform at a higher level with somebody like her in the ring?
The thing is, not really. Like, I want to give the same, you know, I want to give, like, the same quality and passion in every fight, no matter who I'm fighting.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, of course, there are some who will make you nervous. Like, oh, my God, I better do good in front of this person or else, you know, I'll look so bad. But the thing is, like, she has this personality that doesn't put you into that nervous, oh, my God, I have to do good, oh, my God, or else she'll kill me. You know, you don't get that feeling when you're in front of her. When you're in front of her, all right, I'm going to fight her. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to strategize. Okay, this is what I'm going to do. Let's go, Fujimoto. She gives you that feeling where you want to do good, but without the pressure. It's because, like, she makes you feel good about wanting to do good. You know,
do you think she knows how good she is?
I'm pretty sure she knows how good she is. Like, okay. You know, of course, I mean, modesty aside, there has to be a point where you know where your talents are.
I've asked that.
She can't ignore her talents. It's impossible to. I think it's impossible for her to not know how good she is.
Because I can't remember who I asked that to, but I just asked them, like, do you know how good you are? All right. So, okay, a couple of last questions. Who chopped you the hardest?
The most painful chop?
Yep.
Probably Akane. Akane's chops, you can hear them to the back from the back of the room and they will burn your skin. Yeah, Akane probably has the most painful chop.
What about
Ibuki is a close second.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ibuki's chops are very not photogenic, telegenic. they're really good to watch. Like, the way she moves her arms, you know, the whole theatrics of her chops are really good, I think.
So, and they have to learn those in training. So if somebody's taking some chops in training, right?
Yep. I posted this video on Instagram like maybe a year ago where Ohata, Misaki Ohata, was having me and Bunny elbow each other at 100%. So first it was me in front of Bunny and I elbowed her softly, not softly, but like maybe I elbowed her at 30% strength. And Misaki was like, "Full strength! For real! Like you're in a match!" I'm like, "Full strength? Full strength. Okay." And I hit Bunny and you see Bunny like roll to the floor. "I'm sorry, Bunny." And she's, you know, it's like, and I stopped and I tried to go towards Bunny to help her up, and me and Misaki was like, "No, Bunny, hit her back 100%. And like, we're just like, I hate this.
I love Bunny too. Poor Bunny.
I know, poor Bunny.
And so who's,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, who's forearmed you the hardest?
Who's forearmed? Tsukushi has some really mad forearms, man. Like, I had my first single match against her, right? And I wasn't scared at all. Like, you know, like, look at this tiny little thing. How bad could her forearms be? Oh, I found out how bad those forearms can be. I just could not fathom how much pain could be produced by that tiny little body, you know?
But she looks like all muscle when you see her.
She is all muscle. Like, she's super tiny. When she has clothes on, you're like, "Oh, look at this little tiny girl." But then she gets into her costume and she flexes. I'm like, "Oh, crap. Look at all those cuts." You know, she is prime cut beef. Yeah, that's how we call her Muki Muki Macho.
Muki Muki Macho?
Muki Muki Macho.
What's that mean?
Muki Muki is like, Muki Muki is the word for somebody who's really like cut up and beefy, you know? That's why her Tsukushi's elbows, they're called the Muki Muki Macho elbows, because when she's doing her elbows, you can really see her muscles flex and you can really see where, you know, you can really see where that strength is coming from.
Can I ask you one more question before we go?
Sure.
All right. So social media for Ice Ribbon, you know, YouTube, all that kind of good stuff. You guys are pretty creative at what you guys do with the games and stuff you do, and Tsukasa's videos that she does. Yeah. When her whole purse thing was pretty entertaining, those videos she put out. So who comes with those ideas, and how does it all come about to make that kind of social media game, putting it out there like that?
Well, Tsukasa has her own channel. And usually she does it with that other masked person. So I'm not exactly sure how the production of those go. But the Ice Ribbon Variety Project, that is Sarah's project. So it's Sarah's Ice. And every Thursday it gets released at what time? 6 p.m. maybe? Those episodes are Sarah. So she comes up with the idea of those. She schedules the shooting and she does the editing.
Good for her. That's great. Now I find them half the time, I don't know what they're talking about, but it doesn't matter because it's so entertaining. You guys just seem to be having so much fun doing those things. So it's very entertaining.
She's a great host. And Sarah is a great comic. Like the way she delivers comedy is so good. I don't know if it translates just seeing it in Japanese and not understanding what she's saying, but her delivery is so funny. So she's a great comedian.
She's a great wrestler too. That's the thing when I'm talking doing the podcast here, and I just want to keep saying, you know, Mochi Miyagi's really, really good. You know, saying every single day, Totoro is really, really good. I want to say that everybody. Everybody's really, really good. It sounds redundant and terrible, but it's honestly the truth. Everybody's so good. Uno's so good, you know?
I'm glad you think that.
So, Yappy, where can we find you on social media?
Social media. So on Twitter, I'm Yappy, which is Y-A-P-I. So my ring name is spelled Y-A-P-P-Y, but my Twitter is how my name outside the ring is spelled. So Y-A-P-I. And my Instagram is Yappy. Yakitori. So instead of yakitori, the chicken dish, it's yakitori. I also have a Facebook, uh, uh, Facebook for my I have a wrestling account, but I just update it minimally, you know. But you know, if you want to give me likes, I wouldn't say no. It's facebook.com/yappyparty.
Yappy Party. And then Yappy, you also do the English Twitter account for Ice Ribbon. And you also, your art, we didn't even talk about your artwork. Next season of the Joshi Pod, we'll talk to you about your artwork. But no, it's really impressive. I really enjoy what you post online about, you know, the stuff you draw and paint and stuff. And I actually bought some for the first time. I need to buy one of your originals.
Thank you.
But they're hard. They sell out so fast, they're hard to get.
Yeah, I know. It's like they sell out within a day or two, which I'm grateful for. But, yeah.
Now you're a very talented person all the way around. Again, Yappy, we've talked for almost 2 hours. On your day off. I'm humbled and very thankful that we finally got to sit down and do this. And like I said before, I think very highly of you. I think very highly of your adventure-ish lifestyle you live. I'm very jealous of it and very I look up to you in many, many ways. So again, thank you so much for doing the podcast, and I hope the next time I'm in Japan I get to see you again, and I don't know, I'll buy you a strong zero or something.
no strong zeros. But thank you for having me, and thanks for letting me ramble. I'm sorry too for rambling.
we rambled together.
You are